to episode 169 of the Cricket Her Weekly. Sid, we have had an extremely busy week this week. It started off on Monday with us catching a train to London because we needed to be in London for an event that was happening at Parliament. But what else was happening on Monday? It was the England Ashes squad announcement. So we dashed off our train, dashed into the nearest coffee shop, which was full of tourists, and I had to file 450 words for The Guardian. The press conference was then a little bit delayed, so I had about 20 minutes to file my piece, including typing up the quotes. We then had to dash across Westminster Bridge in sticky heat to get to this women's cricket event in Parliament, which we'll talk about in more detail in a minute. But who did we bump into, Sid, on Westminster Bridge?
We bumped into none other than Dania van Niekerk,
yeah,
who was also on her way to the event.
Yeah.
So we went in with her and, you know, took some tourist photographs and then went to this event, which we'll come back to in a minute. So yeah, that was Monday. And what about the rest of the week? The rest of the week didn't get any less crazy, did it?
Well, I was dashing around at my day job in Bournemouth, but then on Thursday and Friday, we're recording this on Saturday morning, by the way, so we are 2 days now into the two simultaneous 3-day warm-up matches, England A v Australia at Leicester and England v Australia A at Derby. I think I've got that right. I tell you what, Sid, it's quite confusing when you're trying to watch two matches in which all of the four teams are playing in whites at two different locations. and also, you know, it's not a T20, it doesn't last for 3 hours, it goes on the whole day. So we have watched 2 days of that. So we will talk about those warm-ups in a minute and what we have taken from those. So perhaps the way to do this episode, Sid, is to make our way through our week chronologically. So that means it starts off with the Ashes squad announcement, which hit our inboxes at, what was it, 11 o'clock in the morning? It was something like that. And there were some big surprises. Now, we had speculated about whether we thought there would be any surprises in the test squad in our last episode, and we both said no. How wrong we were, okay? Because Danny Gibson and Lauren Filer were both included as the only two uncapped players. Now, Gibson, okay, fair enough. She was the World Cup reserve squad. She was the World Cup travelling reserve, wasn't she? You did say in last week's episode you thought maybe we'd see her in the T20s against Australia. Lauren Filer has come a little bit out of left field, even for us who do watch a reasonable amount of domestic cricket.
Yeah, she's she's a fast bowler. She's not like massively fast. She's not.
I'm sorry, Sid. John Lewis begs to differ. He says that she's the fastest female bowler in the country.
That may be true, but she's not she's not bowling Shabnam Ismail pace, okay. And she hasn't taken a whole heap of wickets in domestic cricket this year. It was really interesting listening to Fran Wilson talk about her on the Naughty Child podcast, which I listened to on my run this morning, as I often do on a Saturday. Fran Wilson was saying that both her and Danny Gibson had worked with a particular coach over the winter, and they'd spent some time in New Zealand, and they both come back having put on a yard of pace, and we had actually discussed that Gibson appeared to have substantially
quicker.
Improved her bowling over the winter, and Fran Wilson saying that Lauren Filer had done so as well.
Okay.
So in some ways, perhaps less of a surprise for those people, you know, because if you're seeing that person having made that big step up, then then that's obviously what Heather Knight has come back and seen as well, and taken that to John Lewis, and they've gone with it. So an exciting selection, I guess. Are we actually going to see her play? We'll see. We'll talk about the team in a minute, but I'd be surprised if she plays. But maybe they are going to surprise us.
It's very interesting because England are obviously trying to find their Brunt Shropshire opening quick bowling partnership replacement, aren't they? And they haven't successfully managed to do that yet. Now, see, Catherine Brunt is relatively recently retired. I feel like Lauren Bell is kind of the Anya Shropshire replacement. She's taken that mantle. And if Lauren Bell doesn't play in the test, then I am going to eat every single one of my baseball caps. Because she is clearly nailed on to open the bowling in Red Bull cricket.
She'll play. If she doesn't play, I will eat every cake in the Nottingham press box.
I think you'll do that anyway, won't you, Sid? Anyway, okay, so Lauren Bell has kind of taken on the Anya Shropshire mantle, but who is going to be taking on the Catherine Brunt mantle, or Catherine Siver Brunt mantle, I should say? Well, I think that's TBC. And John Lewis did actually say in his press conference, you know, we've got 6 or 7 young quick bowlers in the country who we're sort of monitoring and we're working with, and we're thinking about, you know, how they might develop. But it's difficult with young fast bowlers, being a fast bowler and a kind of former fast bowling coach himself. It's difficult with young fast bowlers because you don't quite know whether they're going to live up to the promise. And I do think that England are in a kind of spot at the moment where they're not quite sure who is going to be the next Catherine Brunt. And this is, I don't know, in some ways it's a worrying time to not know that, to have to be kind of sort of feeling your way still, because England are about to play the best team in the world, and it feels like they're still experimenting a bit, but you know, I suppose you have to kind of try these things out. Obviously to some extent MR looks unlucky. She will be one of those 6 or 7 that he referenced. She's injured, isn't she?
Yeah, so I mean, how unlucky has she been generally? She missed out. She was selected 2 years ago for the test, and then she didn't make the final 11.
Yeah.
And she was selected a year later, but then she was suffering from long COVID, and they just concluded that she wasn't going to be able to play 4 days.
Yeah.
And it did really feel like she may well have played then. And then this time's come around, and she's had some, you know, little bits of injuries, and you know, they've meant that she couldn't. You know, again, she's not in a position to be able to play that full part. So
that's tough.
How unlucky has she been? But you know. There has been plenty of competition, and it's exciting to see. So, I mean, we'll talk a little bit about the team in a minute. Yeah. Did John Lewis say anything else interesting?
Oh, goodness, Sid.
I put you on the spot there, rather.
Well, to be honest, I was just like, I need him to say something that I can just insert into my...
You were just trying to get 400 words.
Yeah, but... pretty much, that I needed to file within a set time frame. So... I think, as I've said, he seemed a little bit more enthusiastic about Danny Gibson, of the two uncapped players. I sensed from what he said that Gibson's more likely to play. He was very enthusiastic about her, and particularly the batting option.
I mean, as I said last week, she's as close as they come to a proper all-rounder.
Yeah.
And you know, this is actually also something Fran Wilson echoed in that podcast I mentioned earlier. Proper all rounder that, you know, could be selected as a batter or a bowler.
Yeah.
So you know, I think there's a good chance for her there. Certainly going forward, she's going to be an important player to England like that.
One of the big talking points was the lack of spinners in the main test squad, because what England did was they've selected their kind of main test 15, and then they've got another, I think it was another 15 players who are in the A team, who are, as we said, playing in that 3-day warm-up. But they sent some of the main test squad, a couple of the main test squad, Danny White and Nadir, I think, to play in the England A team. So it's a little bit confusing, and I'm still not 100% sure how likely it is that somebody, if they perform really well in the England A game, then gets bumped up to the main test squad if they're not in the test squad at the moment.
Yeah, well, there's also nothing stopping England doing that. We're not in a World Cup situation where you had to name a particular squad. You know, England could literally pick anybody on the day if they, you know, as long as they're available. So,
but John Lewis did say, this is something else interesting. He said we're quite far down the road of selecting what we think is our best 11. We're not quite there yet. But you would think that that means that if you didn't make the kind of initial cut, then you are less
probably
likely.
Had to do something pretty special in the warm up games.
Anyway, so it looks like England are going to be quite heavily reliant on Sophie Eccleston. But I guess we will talk about that. a bit more in a minute. Let's talk about this. Yeah, back to Parliament. So it was in one of the committee rooms, which are kind of used normally to, they get a group of MPs in to sort of debate an issue, don't they? So it was one of the committee rooms, and it was organised by the ECB and the Lords Taverners jointly, I believe. Lords Taverners, obviously a charity who do really great work. Then they actually had some quite important MPs they managed to get attend and participate in this. So they had Yasmin Qureshi, who's the current Shadow Minister for Women and Equalities. They had James Daly, who is the chair of the All-Party Parliamentary Group on Cricket. And then the actual panel itself was an all-female panel, including Donne van Nieuwkerk and Ebony Rainford-Brent. They had somebody who's involved in recreational cricket in Surrey. And then they had a couple of people who have really benefited from the Lords Taverners Wickets programme in Luton, which is sort of trying to encourage people to play cricket who are kind of from underprivileged backgrounds and particularly ethnic minority backgrounds. And they had a Muslim lady on the panel who's got five children who's kind of managed to get into cricket, which was really interesting to hear about. So it was they were emphasising that it was about trying to do more from a parliamentary perspective to promote and discuss women's cricket, wasn't it, Sid?
Yeah, and we had some interesting discussions. You actually had the chance to ask a question, right?
I did. Didn't you? So, put the cat among the pigeons there.
You threw in one of those big wildcats that they've just released into the world again in Scotland, and the pigeons weren't happy about it, were they?
Well, yes. I mean,
tell everyone what question
bearing in mind that obviously Ebony is now on the ECB board of directors, and Claire Connor was also present, I was asked to ask a question, and I said, do you think that it's time for women's cricket to have separate governance? And I tell you what, Sid, it went down like a bucket of cold sick, let's be honest. But I think it's important that we raise these big questions. And even though it was great to have this panel and great for particularly those two women from the Luton Wickets programme to be represented and to feel like they were getting a voice in a really kind of sort of iconic historic space that maybe doesn't see people from those backgrounds get represented anything like enough. I just felt that some of the panel, it was a little bit softball maybe, and that there was conversations about, oh, who are your role models and why did you get into cricket and that kind of thing. And actually, if Parliament and MPs want to be thinking about how we grow women's cricket, then that's a question that they really need to think about, like who governs it and why are they governing it and what are the priorities of the people who are governing it. They're difficult questions, and okay, if you're on the ECB board, then you're not going to come along and say, yeah, I agree with Rath Nicholson that we should have a separate governing body. But it's a tough question that it needs to be thought about.
Well, the really interesting answer for that came from Donne van Nieuwkerk, and it was interesting partly because of the way she answered the question. That what she said was, well, I don't think that we should have separate governance. And she talked specifically about a South African perspective, because she explicitly said, look, I'm not talking about the ECB here. But from a South African perspective, I don't think we should have separate governments. Here's what I think we should do. And then she described a scenario which was essentially separate governments.
Yes.
Because what she talked about was having two pyramids.
Yeah.
So, you know, a pyramid for men's cricket and a pyramid for women's cricket. And that's essentially separate
with
governments.
A kind of separate CEO specifically tasked with the remit of women's cricket. And that is basically the scenario I outlined when I wrote that piece about a separate ICC last year.
So that was an interesting answer on separate pyramids. But there was something else that came out of the whole event for me about separate pyramids. And that is that the issue of growing the women's game is actually two issues. There's an issue about growing the women's game in the recreational sphere or the recreational pyramid, and there's an issue about growing the women's professional game. Mm. And we often conflate those two and we just talk about growing women's cricket. And ultimately, you know, that's because the ECB is one pyramid. And yes, there are people in the ECB that are responsible for recreational game and there are people that are responsible for the professional game. But ultimately, the pyramid kind of meets in the same place.
Yeah.
Whereas what you really need actually is kind of those two pyramids. And so there's a whole focus for some, for perhaps a different organisation on the recreational game compared to the focus of the professional game. Because otherwise, whoever's in charge at the top is going to be more focused on one than the other. And over the last few years, Claire Connor has you know, been laser focused on growing the professional game. And that's not to say that she's neglected. That's not, it would be unfair to say that she's neglected the recreational game.
But
her main priority has been creating a professional structure for the elite players.
And that's been great. We've now got, you know, 80 domestic professional contracts.
But growing the recreational game is a separate problem. And maybe that also needs separate governments.
Just a thought. That's very interesting, Sid. Would you like to come along and give a seminar at Bournemouth University?
I don't think they let people like me. Places like that, Raph.
Yeah.
You'd have to know somebody.
What an interesting thought. Yeah, I think you're right. I think that a lot of the ECB investment and time and focus has gone into the professional game. And now we are in a little bit of a situation where, you know, club cricket is still massively neglected. And we know that, that county cricket is in a mess. Women's county cricket is in a mess. And we have talked about that in previous episodes, so we won't rehash that. But yeah, I think you're absolutely right that that focus needs to be prioritised more.
Okay.
Now, let's talk about these England A and England warm-ups, Sid, because it's been an interesting couple of days. As I said, we're recording this on Saturday morning before day three has happened. So anything could happen on day three. Who knows? Who knows, Sid? But day two in particular, in both games, a massive run fest for both sides. So England A, 562 overnight, and England 611 overnight. This is on first innings. Now, normally in these warm-ups, there's a kind of a sort of element of back and forth. We've only got 3 days. We won't bat for too long because we want there to be this sort of back and forth. But it just feels like both of those teams are going, no, we're going to bat for as long as we want. And we don't really care because our objective is just to put runs on the board. And it's also interesting because we would perhaps expect the England batters to dominate the Australia A side. Although I will say that that comes with a caveat that quite a lot of people recently have said, oh, Australia A would beat any international team in the world. That's a kind of truism that's often trotted out. Well, it doesn't appear to be the case here in this instance. Also though, the England A batters not only managed to bowl Australia out relatively cheaply, Beth Mooney century aside, they actually have then completely dominated with the bat, dominated the Australia bowlers. And you know, if I was John Lewis right now, I'd be on the phone to the England A camp in Leicester going, excuse me, can you keep the Australia bowlers and fielders out there as long as possible, please, because this is great. They're going to be absolutely knackered by the time the real test actually starts on Thursday. So I think England A are 9 down overnight, so maybe they won't bat on for too much longer, even if they don't decide not to declare. But no, don't declare. Like, let's absolutely, you know, keep our foot on the throat of Australia.
Well, they did
Australia.
Look a bit knackered by the end of yesterday.
Oh my goodness, they did. Elise Perry, by the end, was, she must have lost about 20 miles an hour in her run-up, I think.
Yeah, Tony McGrath looked very tired as well, to be honest. I mean, you know, flying across to the other side of the world is not easy at the best of times, and you know, they haven't been here for that long. They've been here for a week or so. So
been thrown in, and it has been hot. Now, I know they're Australians. They should be used to heat. But maybe in the UK, heat hits differently somehow.
Yeah.
Because we don't
have...
We don't have air conditioning. We don't have... We're not quite set up for heat, are we?
Yeah.
Really.
Anyway. Yeah, so, you know, what did we take from those games? I mean, we spent most of the time focusing on the England A versus Australia. Yeah. That was just the one that we chose to watch. I thought there were a couple of really interesting innings.
Okay.
So one of my favourites and one of my picks for kind of the next generation, Bess Heath.
Yeah.
She hit a load of runs very quickly. She baz-balled the hell out
John
of it.
Ball.
Sorry. She John-balled the hell out of it.
I'm sorry, I'm persisting with that, even though nobody else seems to be adopting it.
Well...
it wasn't me who coined it. It was Nat Silver, by the way. Anyway, go on.
Anyway, yes. Yeah, so, you know, Bess Heath looked impressive and definitely playing the kind of the way that England have said they want to be playing.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any chance of her, you know, getting parachuted into the England's actual 11.
No.
but you know, a very positive, but another very positive thing for the future. But for me, the big one was Grace Scrivens, really, because she looked just such a natural playing Test cricket. So she wasn't John Balling it. She blocked a lot. She left a lot.
Yeah.
The Grace Scrivens leave is an elaborate stroke. it's up there with the Nat Sivapool and the Sarah Taylor cover drive. The Grace Scrivens leave.
But how amazing is that when? I don't believe that she kind of played very much, if any, Red Bull cricket, multi-day Red Bull cricket before.
No, I mean, she did play a part in an England v England intra-squad game a couple
of
weeks ago.
So she's been playing Red Bull cricket for approximately 10 days, but she looks like she's been playing it all her life.
She was born to play it, and you know, if England needed someone to, you know, just anchor the innings and go, look, you just stay there while everyone else plays John Ball around you, she would just be the ideal candidate. So that was fantastic to see, and again, bodes really well for the future. What did you take out of it? Who impressed you, Raf?
Well, I mean, obviously, Tammy Beaumont's 200 is the big headline, isn't it?
Her place wasn't definitely assured,
exactly,
was it?
But exactly.
It is now.
Well, completely. We know that Emma Lamb, too, hit 197 in the intra-squad warm-up last week. And we've now had Tammy Beaumont hit 200 against the against the Australia A bowlers. So I think that is we've got our opening partnership there, Sid. That's basically nailed down now, right?
Okay, and what about the rest of the team? Do you think then?
I mean, it's a very interesting one, isn't it? Now, just before we came on air, I wrote down my Test 11, Sid, and then you spotted a problem with it, didn't you?
Yeah, we had no wicketkeeper. Who needs a wicketkeeper?
I forgot. And then I said, you know what? We'll just give Alice Capsey the gloves. Well, you wanted to make Bryony Smith your Ashes wicketkeeper for some odd reason that I still don't really understand. Okay, so I'll read out my rejigged 11 that now does have a wicketkeeper. Thank you for pointing that out, Sid. Okay, so we've got Lamb and Beaumont opening the batting. I think that's pretty clear. We've then got Nat Sivabrun and Heather Knight at 3 and 4. I don't think you can really argue with that, right? I then have got Alice Capsey at 5, and a bit controversially, I've got Grace Scrivens at 6.
Okay, does this mean no Dunkley?
It does, I'm afraid.
So she misses out.
That's harsh, isn't it? That is harsh.
Well, I mean, but it is a hard England batting lineup to be in, right?
Yeah.
You know, John Lewis talks about the problems with having too many bowlers that are fighting for positions. Yeah, obviously, it's really a nice problem to have. But it's actually, you know, it's a very difficult batting lineup to break into.
It is,
you're also leaving out Danny Wyatt, for example, there.
Yeah,
I mean, she's never played a test.
Never played a test. And I think that Danny Wyatt needed to do more than she's currently done in order to cement her spot. She made, 30 odd yesterday?
She probably needed Tammy to fail, honestly.
Yeah.
It didn't happen.
Because I suppose you could have Danny Wyatt below Grace Scrivens, but I have got Lauren Winfield Hill coming in, who made 100 yesterday.
Okay, so she's your wicketkeeper.
She's my wicketkeeper. And that is a bit controversial because she's displaced
Amy Jones. Did make some quick runs
yesterday.
Amy Jones made quick, good runs when nobody was watching.
No, it's tough, isn't it? Okay. I then have got two spinners. Have got, as well as Sophie Eccleston, I've got Charlie Dean. I've obviously got Charlie Dean batting above Eccleston. I think including Dean is important for a couple of reasons. One, obviously, she extends your batting, and that can be really important. And also, I just think that it's tough going into a test with just Eccleston as your spinner. And I think, you know, we saw at Bristol in 2021 against India that she bowled like 70 overs in a day. No, that can't be right. It was a lot.
It wasn't in a day.
Okay.
It was across two innings.
Yeah. Okay. I just got that 70 overs figure in my head. I mean, that's an incredible workload to put on somebody who
and
doesn't
play much. And then she had problems later in the season.
Yeah, and then they tried to say she wasn't having problems. Well, it really impacted her for the rest of the white ball games. So I think, And we know Heather Knight is not bowling at the moment. I think we've got to write off her being able to bowl, because if she was going to bowl,
certainly
she
a significant
would be,
number of
she
overs.
Would be
I mean, she bowled occasionally in the WPL, but
the odd one,
she's
clearly not
bowled
this season.
In a place where she's going to be bowling 30 overs.
And obviously, you know, Alice Capsey, potential for bowling some off spin, but again, she is still fighting with this new bionic shoulder, and I think they really need her to be focusing on her batting. I haven't got Dunkley in my 11. I know she has been turning her arm over. Well, she bowled one over. Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
but apparently she bowled a little bit in the intra-squad game. So I think, I mean, again, that's a very, you're relying on somebody who bowls very infrequently. Somebody else said, oh, Danny Wyatt can bowl. Well, yeah, if she's in your 11, which I'm definitely not nailed down to be
Danny
in your 11.
And Danny Wyatt barely bowled at professional level for years. So the only other person, of course, is Emma Lamb, who's bowled a reasonable amount for Thunder, but she's not quite in that sort of frontline bowler. She definitely feels these days like mostly a batter who bowls occasionally. She has bowled a little bit more than that for Thunder, so she's treated by Thunder as a little bit more of an all-rounder, but England basically haven't treated her as an all-rounder. So two spinners. I mean, the Australians are also planning to go in with two spinners, and two leg spinners.
Yeah.
It looks like they're going to play both Wareham and King.
Yeah, interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, so, and people have discussed this quite a bit. And,
why are England playing one spinner and no leg spinners, and Australia are playing two leg spinners?
So I think there is a key difference for when you're picking a side for Trent Bridge. I think this might explain some of the main Australia side's travails this week, that they've basically picked a side for Trent Bridge and then played them at Leicester. Is that right? They were at Leicester, right? The main side.
Yeah.
So whereas the Trent Bridge, I think they're anticipating that will ultimately suit their leg spinners. Now, it's definitely possible that it could suit their leg spinners, both of whom can turn the ball considerably more than any of England's leg spinners. England are not going to pick a turning leg spinner. The only candidate potentially is Sarah Glenn. There are a couple of turning leg spinners in England, but they're not going to pick either of them. They're not going to pick Levick or...
Throw in Katie Levick! Katie Levick for the Trent Bridge Test! The campaign starts here with 5 days to go.
So, it could be a situation where a turning leg spinner is really, can really come into their own at Trent Bridge. So England might not have made a mistake. They might have just picked the best with what they've got, given they don't have those kind of turny spinners at all.
I will just finish up my 11 by
saying that the numbers
10 and 11 are...
Is Izzy Wong in there?
She isn't. No, I've gone with Kate Cross and Lauren Bell.
Okay.
Now, this is quite a controversial 11, and, it was put together on the back of...
I don't think Kate Cross and Lauren Bell is particularly controversial.
That isn't controversial. No,
actually.
That isn't controversial. Obviously, I haven't got Gibson or Filer in. I haven't got Wong in. And it remains to be seen whether John Lewis and I are of a mind. I think you're right that Kate Cross and Lauren Bell will be opening the bowling for England come Thursday morning at Trent Bridge. Well, if they bowl first. We've already said about Lauren Bell, haven't we, that she is the kind of Anya Shropshire replacement. She's going to be opening the bowling in Red Bull cricket for years to come. I think that John Lewis has basically placed all of his chips in that hat. That was a strange metaphor. But Kate Cross, I'd forgotten this. She's actually the incumbent in terms of opening the bowling for England in a test. She opened the bowling for England against South Africa last summer.
And was a key player the last time England took 20 wickets in a test, which was about 100 years ago.
Which was 2014 at Perth. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and that, to some extent, that match has sort of been a little bit of a chain around her neck in terms of people for a couple of years saying, oh, she's a Red Bull specialist, when England were playing like one test every 2 years. It's not something that you want to be known for. But, we know that she can turn it on against Australia, and that she can bowl well with the Red Bull. And she's also parasite-free, as she has declared on this week's No Balls podcast. So, yeah.
Too much information, Kate. Too much information.
Well, we'd already had all of the information about... Anyway, let's not go there. Listen to the last four episodes of No Balls if you'd like to hear about...
If you want too
Kate
much
Cross
information.
Parasite. It's great to see her back, though, at her best. And I am so excited about Trent Bridgeson. I cannot wait.
Yeah. We'll see you all there.
Yeah, I guess we'll be recording an episode midway through. So hopefully that finds its way to you. And we hope you all enjoy watching the Trent Bridge test as well.
Come and say hello to us if you're there and you spot us.
Do that.
We don't bite.
What? Okay. We don't bite, but Sid may make stupid jokes. Right. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you in a week's time. Bye.
Bye.